Chapter 1. YouTuber faces 500 years in prison for insane reason.
What's going on, everyone? Jeremy here from The Quartering, and this is a pretty interesting case because there are actually a lot of big YouTubers out there that, you know, it's funny, like, there are a lot of YouTubers who have millions and millions of subscribers that I've never even heard of, and this particular one is that. I only just heard of him because he is facing 500 years. 500 years in lockup. Let's get it in the story. So the YouTuber goes by the name Omi in a Hellcat. I'm assuming, probably referring to the vehicle he likes to drive. And his name is Bill Omar. I'm not going to try to, I'll mess up his last name for sure. He's been detained on investigation found into several fraud and piracy scams. The creator has 792,000 subscribers on YouTube, gaining popularity by showing off his countless luxury vehicles, priceless jewelry, and dozens of properties around Pennsylvania. Some side projects have been investigated by the Department of Justice, leading to him and two other men being indicted with federal charges. Omi operates a website that provides broadcast TV channels for a pay-as-you-go fee. The legality of the website has been under investigation for some time, as seen in a video posted on the channel back in June. Now, if you look at his channel, you know, this is probably, you know, probably a case of somebody not understanding the law, exactly, thinking they can be good, that, you know, thinking they'll be fine. But you see here, he's got a baby on the way, 800,000 subscribers. Seems like a relatively active channel, but I don't think he got his money from YouTubing. I think he got his money from this side project. On September 21st, the feds indicted him on 62 counts, including 19 of public performance of a protected work, essentially copyright laws, 6 counts of wire fraud, among other crimes. In a statement released from the DOJ, Acting U.S. Attorney Jennifer Arbitier for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania said, these defendants are charged with engaging in a massive years-long scheme to steal copyrighted content, which is a serious federal crime. If convicted on all counts, he faces 514 years in federal pound-me-in-the-rear prison. Now, according to Philadelphia local news, who was able to interview Omi after he posted bond. He said, I found a loophole. I ran through it, and I did great. There are other colleagues in the same business I was in, and they never got in trouble with the FBI. Well, as we know, with these particular cases, with piracy, I don't know how old you might be, but if you're old as me, you might remember the satellite TV boxes where you would get, you would have a satellite, and then you'd have a decoder card, and then, so you used to have these decoder cards. Before that, there was the black box. Before that, I don't know, physically taking the cable and connecting it. There's always been a lot of ways that people have gamed the system. Usually, the government stays out of it. But once money starts trading hands, that's where things get different. I remember, does everybody remember the whole, back when like, LimeWire and Kazaa and all these things were really popular. All the stories about Disney, you know, suing little 10-year-olds who, you know, got all the Disney films off these things. So a lot of companies will vigorously protect their copyright. Generally, they're not going to go after one person, you know, doing it. Once you're making money off it, which apparently this person did, then they bring down the house. Along with other charges, Omar is also accused of transforming his gains into various assets, causing dozens of properties around Philadelphia and more than 50 vehicles to be seized, despite attempts to hide them. While the time frame for his lockup is unknown, he told Fox 29 in Philadelphia that he has already moved to other business ventures while his case has moved through the system. I'm going to guess that he's probably going to do some time. 514 years, that's probably unlikely. Probably not going to live that long. He says, I don't think I ever did anything wrong. Obviously, I was running businesses wide open in the public. Now we're going to have our day in court, fresh out of federal custody with a camera in hand. And the social media influencer spoke to Fox 29 outside of his home, where he was dotted nearly a dozen high-end Mercedes, Jeep, Dodge vehicles. One neighbor called his home the car dealership. So you're saying you're completely innocent of these charges, asked Fox 29. Not completely innocent would be a false statement. Ignorance is no excuse of the law, he said. He claims past accountants and tax preparers got him into tax trouble. He claims from 2016 to 2019, and two partners created this multi-million dollar TV streaming empire. He claims his company stole and retransmitted cable signals from companies like Comcast, Verizon, Fios. Subscribers would pay $15 a month for access to premium cable channels, on-demand movies, and pay-per-view events, according to the indictment. I don't know on what planet he would have thought that this was okay. I mean, there's ignorance to the law, and then there's like, what probably happened is he started it, you know, doing it. I think he was getting away with it for a while. All of a sudden, the money started coming in, and, you know, he stopped thinking logically. The idea is that he's going to walk away from this. I mean, every major, he's going to be broke. He's going to lose it all. That's a fact. He says, I found a loophole. I ran through it, and I did great. There are other colleagues in the same business I was in, and they never got in any trouble. Doesn't matter. He says he knew an arrest could be imminent. Back in November of 2019, his sprawling home was raided by agents who hauled away more than $35 million in assets. The government confiscated dozens of properties around Philadelphia and more than 50 vehicles, including a Bentley, a Tesla, and a Rolls Royce. Facing decades in prison, the former dealer from North Philly turned millionaire. So he's already moved on to other business ventures while his cases go through the system. Did I blatantly just ran away from the law and try to evade? None of that stuff. I've never done, he said. This guy is going to do a lot of time. He seems ignorant to that fact, or perhaps he's trying to put up a brave front. But I don't think the federal government is playing here. You're talking about getting 512 years, you know. In the past, there have been, you know, people that have done these types of things with their cable boxes, and, you know, I don't know if they really went away for a very long time. But the difference here is this dude was making millions, tens of millions of dollars, and Comcast, Verizon, Fios, Time Warner, HBO, they're all going to want a piece of that. They're all going to get a piece of that. And then the federal government is going to make sure that they get their time. This isn't the first time YouTubers have gotten into trouble in the past. In fact, we can look at Mona Lisa Perez, a makeup and fashion vlogger, who now uploads videos of herself giving advice. And, you know, this was somebody who, you know, her boyfriend got locked up. Remember that? Where they like, oh, I'm going to hold this thick book. And, I'm going to use a weapon and it's not going to penetrate the book, except it did. And he died. You had Ryan Stone back in that day, the Stokes twins. Money, I think, makes people remember Stanislav, the guy that locked his girlfriend, outside, and she didn't survive it, for $1,000 super chat or something like that. There's a lot of YouTubers that get involved in this kind of stuff. Clout is already, insane. This guy says, I'm going to go to jail for a few years. He said in a video posted after the raid. The video has been viewed by nearly 2 million times. Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe people just don't care about jail. It's a different culture, a different mindset, I guess. To me, you know, freedom is kind of a big deal. And I don't know. What do you think about this? Do you think he's going to actually do any time? Do you think that, you know, the government is going to just make an example of him and put 512, what was it exactly? 512 years? 514 years. Do you think he'll do any actual time, or do you think they'll just take all his money and make him poor? I think he's probably going to do some time.
Chapter 2. Arizona State University doubles down on student segregation.
Last week, I was covering the situation at Arizona State University, and a lot has developed over the weekend. If you don't remember, there was a multicultural center, which really the only way you can describe it is saying non-whites. Whites not allowed. White people not allowed. And it feels even creepy to just talk like that. But this is what's happening on college campuses. They're bringing back segregation. They're so progressive, they're bringing back segregation. Now, in the video, you could see a room that is enormous in size. Probably had somewhere around 50 different independent study spots, of which 4 were being used. At one point, a woman whom I'm going to reveal to you later, who has an interesting past, confronts 2 young men over their use of their multicultural space and call them awful, kicking them out. Now, I talked to the one of the gentlemen at length, and you know, there is some speculation of whether or not this was a troll. Now, he denied it to me. He said that he wears that "I didn't vote for Biden" shirt all the time, and that this was not an intentional troll. The Chick-fil-A mugs were a odd coincidence because they tried going to one restaurant and they were very busy, so they went to another one and it ended up being Chick-fil-A. Maybe that's all true. Maybe it's not. Doesn't matter. Because what happened, regardless of even if this was intentional to bait them, is not okay. There's this difference where we look at society and we say something like, wow, here's a person who says something really awful and they got, you know, the back of someone's hand. I may understand why they did, but it doesn't make it okay. Let's say somebody just calls somebody, some crazy person dropping the N-word on a black individual who, and they're using it in a derogatory manner and they get cracked. You can look at a situation like that and say, yeah, I understand why, but again, it still doesn't make it right. I mean, are we at the point where I need to remind people that 2 wrongs don't make a right? But what was interesting about the reveal is the university has responded and gotten absolutely destroyed. GoFundMe was launched. And there were a lot of criticisms about this too, saying, you know, hey, look, okay, it was a funny meme, but do we need to make everybody rich? Even I was kind of like, I'll throw a few bucks in there, but it's not like these, you know, we can't, you know, be doing GoFundMes for everybody all the time. They ended up getting an offer of 2 free laptops, thanks to Meta PCs. By the way, promo code The Quartering for Meta PCs, if you want to save money when you buy one there. And I think that was cool. I was happy to provide that connection, and I was able to make that connection over the weekend. But the real interesting thing is the way that the media has spun this. Normally, I actually think that there's been a small change because the pushback to this nonsense is actually getting better. You know, I did a live stream over the weekend. By the way, if you're enjoying my content, please do leave a like on the video. And if you haven't yet, there's a red subscribe button down below. I know it's a pain sometimes to do, but I would greatly appreciate it if you subscribe. Now, I talked to some people over the weekend while I was live streaming. A lot of people are kind of black-pilled on all of this, really negative, thinking, you know, like, look, we've got to lower ourselves to their level. And I understand why people feel that way. I'm trying to resist that temptation because of stuff like this. The university puts out this hilarious double-down statement. Excuse me. Calling it a disagreement. Here's our statement regarding the viral video that captured a disagreement between students on campus. I would argue that at the very least, this was an obvious like bullying situation. This was not a disagreement. This was segregation on the college campus that just needs to not exist. But look at this, okay? Look at this and feel some hope. 200 likes. That's all it got. Compared to 2,600 comments. We're going to take a look at some of the comments. The dean of students' office is aware of a disagreement between a handful of students that was captured in video that circulated on social media. The dean of students' office will be discussing with all involved. ASU is a community of more than 100,000 people from 50 states and 150 countries. Differences of opinion are part of the university experience. The university expects respectful dialogue between students in all engagements. While this was not, it was probably, you know, it wasn't out of control. There was no screaming in people's faces. So, you know, you could argue that, you know, it was somewhat respectful, even if the things that were being said by one part of the group were insane. By the way, I'm going to reveal to you just who one of these individuals is. It turns out they're not just a student. Just hold on. I've got a few things to talk about here. So here's their reply. So we look at their tweet. Here's our statement regarding the viral video that captured a disagreement between our students. Top reply. Now they had 200 likes. Here's my reply. 2,800 likes. Swap the colors of each side of this quote-unquote disagreement and tell me you wouldn't be calling it something else. This is tax dollar-funded racism. And I stand by that statement, 100%. That's exactly what this is. You want to know why people are so politically divided in this country? Is because it's starting at the very earliest levels. You know, we have the Libs of TikTok Twitter account exposing a lot of these teachers and stuff like that who are starting a lot of this rhetoric, this divisive language at a very young age. You want to know why something like a poke in the arm has become such a hot button political issue. This is all part of that. This is why, you know, every little thing down to the sub sandwiches that you eat, the place that you get your fried chicken from. This is a political statement nowadays, and it's really a rough spot to be. And I would invite my viewers and listeners, because I know a lot of people just listen to my videos. I don't know why you would deprive yourself of my beautiful face. You know, to decouple from that a little bit. You know, I understand not wanting to support a company that, I don't know, hates America or something like that. There are several of them. Ben & Jerry's would be a good example. There are plenty of other options to choose in expensive ice cream. But at some point, you know, if you really, I talk about this in video games too, like, man, Blizzard has done some really terrible things, but I really enjoy World of Warcraft. It's like my only thing, and I feel like a piece of garbage for playing it. You shouldn't. Life is short. You should be able to enjoy what you want to enjoy, and you don't owe anyone an apology for that. You can see it was two students being harassed because of the color of their skin. I'm embarrassed and sad that this is what my school is known for. 1,900 likes. Who the heck wrote this? This was not a disagreement. It was a video showing two students being harassed and bullied to leave an area. You can see here 300 likes. There was racial discrimination on campus in a space that is being prepared to be a multicultural space. It was led by a group of students who thought they had a blank check to harass other students based on skin tone of the belief. This went far beyond a disagreement. Now, who exactly is that student? Well, Chase had issued, by the way, a comment, which I shared on Twitter. Very, I don't know, weak. But I understand. You know, there's one camp of people that say, like, we got to fight and die on every hill because that's why they're beating us. And they have a valid argument. But also, this kid's just trying to get through college. And maybe, you know, his parents are working hard to help him out. He's working hard. He doesn't want to become like some martyr for the culture war to get chewed up and spit out in 15 minutes. He wants to, you know, so I understand why he might have wrote this statement. I didn't agree with it, but it's not my life. You know, there are other commentators out there, you know, who have, there's no amount of suffering that they are willing to allow other people to go through for their cause. I'm just not one of those people. But interestingly enough, that chick from the ASU video who went viral, she wasn't even an undergrad. She was a Ford fellow, because of course she was. This via Chris, at Chris Carl, I believe his name is. If you were online yesterday, you saw a 2-minute clip of a woman freaking out on an ASU campus. It was covered by Tucker Carlson, Newsweek, The Post Millennial, EJMR, and received untold millions of views. We already know how it happened, right? Okay. Now, my first reaction upon seeing the ASU video was to shrug it off. Another immature, overzealous, brainwashed 18-year-old freshman who's pretending woke buzzword gumbo, parroting. Beyond just a kid, I was ready to leave it alone. She's much too dumb to be held responsible for her actions, and besides, she's probably stressed out over exam or boys or something. Alas, the Twitter mob was not willing to leave it alone. They exposed her as Sarah Tacola, PhD student in sustainability. I don't know what you're going to do with that degree, but anyway. I was shocked and horrified to learn that she was, in fact, already a grown-up. Judging by her LinkedIn profile page, she is pushing nearly 30, and therefore ostensibly possesses a fully developed frontal cortex. It was all of a sudden punching sideways, not punching down. Her LinkedIn also reveals an interesting link to the Ford Foundation. Yes, Sarah is a 40. When I discovered this, I had no choice but to write a new Substack article. It was just too perfect. For context, see my article from 2 days ago where I spent 3,500 words ranting about the cancerous impact of 40s on society. The article that you're reading now is a 700-word cherry on top of that. This ASU incident is a perfect microcosm of how the Ford Foundation is a bullying society. This is how they operate. This notion of classical liberalism in academia is dead, and the Ford Foundation killed it. How did the ASU administration react to the video going viral? With a mealy-mouthed press release, of course. I read this as ASU not taking sides until the whole thing blows over and hopefully goes away on its own. Typical bureaucratic cowardice. How many deans do you think it took to write this statement? It was such a softball, just condemned segregation. And yet somehow they managed to butcher it completely. For this difference in opinions, ASU was savagely ratioed on Twitter, receiving 1,900 comments and a paltry 139 likes. I cannot wait to see how they react next. Surely they will only dig the hole deeper, twisting themselves into knots, trying to explain why it's okay for one racial group to act like this and not the other. Why don't rules apply to certain folks? The Ford Foundation enables and funds this kind of crap. Their core mission is to ensure that every nook and cranny of the formal education and academic apparatus is infested with it. If ASU is like this, imagine what liberal arts colleges of the Berkeleys of the world are like. It won't stop until the next GOP president uses the tax code to crush this not-for-profit behemoth. This is the same conclusion as my first article. Tax these foundations. This woman was 30 years old. Not just some kid. Absolutely pathetic behavior.
Chapter 3. Sony's Venom sequel will reveal one shocking LGBT surprise.
I'm starting to wonder if this like fake woke baiting is a new way for movies to get press. I've talked about at length before that, you know, I am a big fan of Venom, you know, Venom, Spider-Man, Carnage, all these I grew up with in the fighting games too. Just really, really love the characters. And now in the sequel, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, the director has decided to queer bait, essentially, saying that Venom's coming out and love affair between Eddie and the alien symbiote in Let There Be Carnage. The film director has now pointed to a scene that is sort of an LGBTQIA kind of festival, as a moment Venom has his being out moment. This is very dangerous queer baiting, I would argue, because if it is what I think it is, and it's treated as kind of a joke, or if they treat it like a joke, it's not going to go over well. And I just don't know why these movies can't stand on their own, you know, be good on their own merits. But here we are. Andy Serkis says a particular scene in Venom, Let There Be Carnage is a coming out party for the alien symbiote whose relationship with Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock is at the center of the movie. In a recent interview with UpRocks, the Venom sequel director spoke about the film's rave scene, which he shared had originally been set in the carnival of the in a carnival, but evolved thanks to stars Hardy's relationship with rapper Little Sims, who also appears in the movie. She actually had made a song, unbeknownst to her, called Venom, that connected very much with the first movie. And so Tom got in touch with her and said the song kind of became the focus. When the director shared that Hardy and co-writer Kelly Marcel had wanted the scene to be a coming out event, well, Tom and Kelly were always about Venom coming out and going to a party that was very sort of an LGBTQIA festival. Really, I'd call it. And his coming out party, basically. This is Venom's coming out party. This is another perfect example of, you know, Hollywood just being just the worst. Look, two men can have a deep affection for each other, love each other, be friends, be family, without also sleeping together. This is a thing that Hollywood is completely unable to do. Also with two female characters. When two female characters are strong, they must be sleeping together. And if they're not, then the internet literally gets mad about it. I'm not kidding. This culture is why you get a lot of this. Now, what's it actually going to look like in the movie? I don't know. But the fact that, you know, we're seeing this now is just like, can't we have something with just be a good movie without having to have all this? Oh, but you know, Venom's cool, but he's also gay. When asked to confirm if what he was implying was that Venom was not a straight alien symbiote, what as was actually coming out, he responds, "Well, coming out, being out," before acknowledging that a line from the character points him to speaking for the other. What is interesting is that just like he says in the movie, "We must stop this cruel treatment of aliens," he says. You know, we all live on this ball of rock, you know, and so inadvertently becomes kind of he's speaking for the other. He's speaking for the freedom of the other. The end of the interview, which features him speaking on the other Venom-related things, like star and friend Woody Harrelson's involvement in the character Carnage's impact on the film's coloring, Serkis responds to the statement by saying, "It's very obvious that Eddie and Venom are in love," by calling their relationship the movie's central love affair. Absolutely, they do love each other, and that's kind of at the center of the movie. It's a love affair, the central love affair. What? Literally what? I mean, hopefully there's a scene where they pleasure each other. I mean, I would hope. We all love the will they, won't they dynamic between Eddie Brock and Venom. And it seems Venom, Let There Be Carnage director does too. In a new interview with Uproxx, he talked about taking over directional duties of the film and how he used the film to ship the two characters. Absolutely, they do love each other, and this is kind of the center of the movie. It is that love affair, that central love affair. To the director, the love between the two is so powerful, he wanted to include a coming out scene of sorts that made parallels between Venom and queer love stories even more clear. Tom Hardy and co-writer Kelly Marcel were always talking about him coming out. He continued to say he sees an obvious parallel between Venom's story and the stories of the LGBTQ+ people. He says in the movie, "We must stop the cruel treatment, blah, blah, blah. Fans love Eddie and Venom's odd couple dynamic in the first film." Yeah, but they don't want them to be boyfriends. I suppose some may. The two have great chemistry, and at one point, the symbiote even has the idea to kiss Eddie when it's being worn by Eddie's ex-wife, played by Michelle Williams. The first Venom film was surprisingly different superhero tale that we're used to. The back and forth between Eddie and Venom was a major reason. With the lack of queerness in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it would be great to see this dynamic in Let There Be Carnage. Look, I'm not against this out of hand. But is that a thing that existed in Carnage's or in Venom's deep lore history? I actually don't know that for a fact. But I also know what I do know about Venom is that it was never about his love affairs. If they were, if it was, maybe when I was young, I just completely missed it. It's possible, right? It's possible that I completely missed that sort of stuff. But all, they get all this free press from the Mary Sue and Coming Out magazine and all this stuff. You could see here's the Mary Sue's coverage. Well, most of us know that Andy is the man who portrayed Gollum in Lord of the Rings films. The veteran actor is also an accomplished director. His latest and most high-profile film is a sequel to Venom titled Venom Let There Be Carnage. The film will find Eddie Brock struggling to get along with his symbiote companion, as well as facing off against a new foe, Cletus Cassidy, a.k.a. Carnage. I mean, I'm not exactly sure. You know, we can see, you know, I'm not sure about this one. You know, is it a love story saying they love each other? Well, yeah, I do think that Hollywood directors and things like that of this nature are likely to bait, like deliberately be obtuse or deliberately be, and then they could come back and say, well, I never said they were boyfriend and boyfriend. I just said that it was a love story and that's what it is. I mean, that could be, exactly what they're talking about, that Venom and Eddie Brock are just deep friends, man friends or whatever. I don't know how this works out. I don't know at what point we're going to get back to just, hey, it's a sweet movie and let's not talk about, you know, maybe it's not important who loves who. There are movies that are, you know, that do hinge on relationships and those are love stories. But then again, if Carnage, if that's what they want Venom to be is a love story, it's probably not for me. Maybe it'll be for you. I hope you enjoyed this video. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Chapter 4. Dog the Bounty Hunter joins Gabby Petito Case.
I know that interest seems to be waning a little bit in the Gabby Petito Brian Laundrie situation, but over the weekend, the circus has kind of started to ramp up. There's been a lot of people who are coming out of the woodwork to cover this situation. I've seen psychics on TikTok and, you know, endless sightings, endless people that were sure they saw him and then they get a bunch of viral views. Look, I would be a hypocrite if I didn't say, you know, why are you covering? You know, I'm covering something that I wouldn't normally cover. But also because she was a YouTuber, really, I think if this case had not had the YouTube tie, it wouldn't have been something that, you know, would have been on everyone's radar. But over the weekend, things are starting to take some circus-like turns here, but to give you the most up-to-date, there is the search that is currently happening in the nature preserve is, and what we all knew was a total waste of time. Gabby's parents throwing that red. I'm sorry, Brian's parents. Excuse me. Throwing that out there as a red herring to have law enforcement spend thousands of man hours looking for him in a place where I believe they knew he never was. Is it possible that he's out there and he's evaded the searches? He's evaded the alligators. He's evaded everything else. Yes. Okay. It's, you know, it's possible. It seems extraordinarily unlikely at this point. And now they are basically scaling back that search. You could see Dog, the bounty hunter. So essentially where we have our now protesters are showing up at the parents' house to demand that the parents cooperate. And again, I don't know exactly how to feel about this. I mean, I understand why they might feel the way they do, why they want to protect their son. I understand that. But at some point, maybe you've got to realize that these other parents are parents too. Now, if we go back, remember the story of these officers who had pulled over Gabby and her beau. And there was this idea that, oh man, the 911 dispatcher never told these officers that this thing happened. Well, it turns out that they, in fact, were. Minutes after Utah PD were told about the report of a man striking her and taking off in a white Ford Transit van with Florida plates, officers pulled over the family, or pulled over the two, and appeared to zero in on her as the aggressor, radio dispatch recording show. RP reporting party states seeing a male strike female domestic. The dispatcher states around 4:38. He got into a white Ford van. Transit van has a black ladder on the back, Florida plate. The dispatch audio first obtained by Fox shows that the dispatcher did in fact inform the officers that Laundrie had been the aggressor. And it looks like they went on to ignore that. These officers are probably going to be in a little bit of trouble, I would imagine. And now as protesters are gathering, we see allegedly, according to Dog, more than 1,000 new tips have come in. But first, before that, sleuths think she may be holding a pew-pew in photos after possible pew-pew scene in Brian's bedroom. Now, I don't know. I can't really tell what that is. It looks like an American flag skinned Glock or something like that. I don't know if I would call that disturbing. I mean, she's clearly holding it for a picture. I don't know. You see, the short clip appears to document moments from the blogger's adventures and travels. It's titled Reminiscing 2020 Memories. We have a lot of big plans for this new year. She appears to tease her followers with a potential road trip that includes a hashtag van life travel. I don't know. The weapon itself probably needs to be located. If you're the, you know, law enforcement, but I mean, unless it was used in the other issue, you know, in the actual crime, I'm not really sure it's relevant. You know, a person in the field just before the van is shown, there's no evidence there was any person. There's a lot of wild theories going around, claims that Gabby may be pregnant are pure speculation. It's not known if she was expecting a baby at the time of her disappearance. Dozens of wild theories, including speculation that Laundrie may have a burner phone after spotting changes to social media platforms, have gone viral since Gabby's disappearance. I mean, this is the problem when you have like these national cases. You get so many wild tips that you spend more time ruling things out that you never should have, never actually found, you know, than ever actually feeling good tips. You have Dog the bounty hunter, and I don't know how I feel about this. This feels a little slimy. I think Dog had a good network of you know, snitches in I think in Colorado and in Hawaii where he did his work. He does have a large fan base, people that might be willing to tell him something that they might not be willing to tell someone else. But he says that he's joined the search and says he's received more than 1,000 leads. From a legality standpoint, I don't think Dog the bounty hunter actually has any legal rights to be involved in this, from what I can understand. Dog told Fox and Friends he hopes to zero in on the potential location within 48 hours. One man versus the entire FBI. Well, maybe they're all pretending to be you know, they're all still at the Capitol in their polo shirts. Maybe he will do it. At this point, I don't know what to think. Dog Chapman said Monday has received more than 1,000 tips since joining the search for the 23-year-old Florida man who's been declared a person of interest. We've gotten over 1,000 leads, so we're going through all those, said the famed bounty hunter on Fox and Friends. I would say within 48 hours, we'll probably have the location where we'll start tracking at. Officials have been searching for Laundrie for over a week, and according to officials, the search will likely be scaled back and targeted based on tips. Yeah, well, that's probably what it should have been in the first place, rather than letting his parents send you guys out on this wild goose chase. You know, you see him saying, these Christians get together. Please pray that God will lead me through this wilderness right up to it, and then I'll be able to bring him in alive. Laundrie's returned to his parents on September 1st in the van that they traveled with, but without Gabby. Her passing, according to the autopsy, has been ruled non-accidental, but officials have not disclosed how she passed. Now, sometimes they hold this information because, you know, they want to know, you know, there's only a certain number of people that might actually know, you know, how she passed, and they might want to use that against him. You have these guys, I mean, essentially Dog is just trespassing. He shows up at the door. The mom called 911 on him. So I don't know. You know, you see people saying, I would suspect his parents helped him buy a cheap used car to get away in. The car would be used for him to get into the mountains. Laundrie understands car camping, where to park without creating attention. He will abandon an older car with a Florida registration, which will still be in the previous owner's name, somewhere near a trailhead. The car will sit unnoticed for weeks, giving him a big head start. Good luck, Dog. He will be tough to find off the grid, especially now that there are fewer hikers to spot him in the off season. That's actually a good point. You know, the camper, do we know if the camper was ever returned? I don't know. He says, Dwayne is vastly different from a lot of ex-cons, and he's openly talked about it. He learned from every mistake and poor choice he made and has helped many along the way. And for those naysayers, Dog was asked to join the investigation. He has always worked alongside police and helped apprehend people no one else could. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't say I'm a huge Dog the Bounty Hunter fan. I remember watching his show for a while. It was pretty, you know, entertaining. I don't know. I hope, if he's in it just for some clout, but he also helps in the investigation, sure, fine by me. News anchor suspended in dispute over coverage of Gabby Petito and Woman of Color report. Good. Now, they didn't do this to Joy or whoever was the other person, Joy Barr or whatever her name was, who said that. But a lot of people have been saying, you know, Somerville, who is white and has an adopted black daughter, was said to have pushed back against management after being told his suggestion was inappropriate. The sources told the outlet that Somerville wanted to acknowledge disparities in media attention between the cases of white women and those of indigenous women of color. So you have the news media trying to get woke, and you get fired for it. So, you know, I don't hate that either. So kind of a smattering of updates. We may see nothing now for weeks on end, and that's really unfortunate. But hopefully Brian will do the right thing and turn himself in. And if he's innocent, then let him come in and prove it.
Chapter 5. According to scientists, the Jedi are problematic.
Now, the term Jedi is, in fact, deeply problematic. And the only way that you can make up forever using this term in a positive manner is by clicking the like button on this video and also by clicking the red subscribe button. There's literally no other way that you can redeem humankind other than that. Now that you've done that, Scientific American has declared the term Jedi inappropriate for movements of social justice. Now, I want to point out, this is a statement made by an organization called Scientific American. Scientific. J.W. Hammond and a bunch of other morons wrote an article why the term Jedi is problematic. In the article, they note that Jedi is being used as an acronym to stand for Justice, Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion. However, they take issue with the acronym because of its associations with the Jedi in the Star Wars universe. What do you mean, associations? The term Jedi is created. It's not associated with. The term Jedi is Star Wars. They specifically claim that Jedi are inappropriate mascots for social justice. As for why, they immediately point to, of course, race. Quote, they are a religious order of intergalactic police monks prone to white saviorism and toxically masculine approaches to conflict resolution, including oppressive duels with phallic lightsabers, gaslighting by means of Jedi mind tricks. The Jedi are also an exclusionary cult, membership to which is partly predicated on the possession of heightened psychic and physical abilities or force sensitivity. Well, first and foremost, let's just pretend this is all real. The existence of Jedi to me is more real than what it is these morons are saying. There's a couple of hilariously insane statements just that I has previously noted to you. And again, I must point out, this is an article by Scientific American. Now, first of all, the Jedi is not an exclusionary cult. It has no means by which it excludes people from their force sensitivity. So in fact, it allows all who are force sensitive a chance to join their ranks. The idea that you're going to worry that a lightsaber is phallic shaped, I would honestly 100% believe you if you told me that this was a meme, that all of this was just a joke and the joke's on all of us. Because quite frankly, I can't think of another reason why I should take this seriously. Quote, first off, it's unclear why the Jedi being a religious order is wrong or acting as a police force is wrong. That seems to be a reflection of the author's views rather than anything else. I think there's a word about discriminating against one's religion. This is via John F. Trent over on Bounding Into Comics. Secondly, the claim of white saviorism rings hollow given that the main leaders of the Jedi Order is Mace Windu, played by Samuel L. Jackson, one of them. Excuse me. Thirdly, while some of the authors claim to be Star Wars fans, it's clear that these first couple sentences, that they never paid attention to the movies. In The Phantom Menace, the Jedi are sent to peaceably resolve the trade dispute between Naboo and the Trade Federation. They only responded with force after the Trade Federation's attempt to end them. But go on about meanie duels and toxic masculine approaches, whatever that means. The gaslighting claim, also hilarious, as this entire article is an attempt to gaslight Star Wars and the Jedi. After making these ridiculous claims, they go on to make some more strikingly force-wielding talents are narratively explained in Star Wars not merely in spiritual terms, but also in ableist and eugenic ones. These supernatural powers are naturalized as biological hereditary attributes, so it's the force potential is framed as a dynastic property of noble bloodlines, for example, the Skywalker dynasty. The force disparities are rendered innate physical properties, measurable via midichlorian counts, not unlike force genetics tests, and augmentable via humanoid engineering. They then conclude, the heroic Jedi are thus emblems for a host of dangerously reactionary values and assumptions. Sending the message that justice work is akin to cosplay is bad enough. Dressing up our initiatives in the symbolic garb of the Jedi is worse. Now, if you told me that this was a meme assignment, like, hey, What if the world was absolutely insane? And let's pick two topics out of a hat. They pick the term Jedi and they pick the term problematic. And their assignment is that they need to write the most ridiculously absurd, you know, thesis on it as they can, and to be convincing. I would believe that that was the nexus of this. As defined by Merriam-Webster, eugenics is the practice of advocacy of controlled selective breeding in human populations, as by sterilization, to improve their genetic composition. This is not practiced in Star Wars or by the Jedi Order. The claim is absurd. And to claim that checking your midichlorian count is like a forced genetics test is dumb as well. Doctors check all kinds of things in your body when they take blood and other samples, and no sane person is comparing those to eugenics or ableism. Not only are the Jedi problematic in their minds, but they claim Star Wars has a problematic cultural legacy. They explain that the space opera franchise has been critiqued for trafficking in injustices such as various isms and ableism. Think, for example, of the so-called slave Leia costume in infamous for stripping down and chaining up the movie series' first leading woman as part of an Orientalist subplot. Clearly, these arguments are getting more and more absurd, and it's even more obvious they didn't watch the films. The guy who captures Princess Leia for trying to free Han Solo from his clutches is Jabba the Hutt's. Jabba the Hutt, an evil gangster. He dresses her up as a trophy to be displayed, showing off his power. However, by the end of the story, it's Leia who's ending that said gangster with the chain that Hutt, in fact, bound her with. Nice little symbolism there. As for Orientalist subplot, are they claiming that Jabba the Hutt is supposed to be an Arab because he happens to be based on Tatooine? Is that, if so, that makes no sense. And now they're accusing, of course, Star Wars of racism. Nevertheless, they double down on those very same claims, saying Star Wars is arguably conflates the alienness with non-whiteness, often seeming to rely on racist stereotypes when depicting non-human species. This doesn't even make any sense. It's probably why they didn't provide any examples whatsoever. How is Admiral Akbar a stereotype? Like I said, the article is full of gaslighting. Next, they point to ableism. The series regularly defaults into ableist tropes, memorably in the portrayal of Darth Vader, in which links the villain's physical disability with machinic inhumanity and moral deviance, presenting his technology-assisted breathing as a sinister auditory maker of danger and doom. Luke Skywalker literally gets a mechanical arm to replace the one that was chopped off by Darth Vader, and he's still the hero. And the other extreme is R2-D2 and C-3PO are literal robots who are also portrayed as heroic despite being the comedic relief. What's more, the bodies and voices centered in Star Wars have, with few exceptions, historically been those of white men. And while recent films have increased gender and racial diversity, important questions remain regarding how meaningfully such changes represent a departure from the series' most problematic past. James Earl Jones is the literal voice of Darth Vader. Vader Lando Calrissian has an excellent story arc full of betrayal and redemption. Mace Windu is one of the main leaders of Jedi Order. Again, do I have to ask, do these people even watch the movies? The authors also take note with the fact that Disney owns Star Wars. You know, Jedi connects justice initiatives to corporate capital. They specifically point out Disney. We are, in effect, providing that corporation, Disney, with free form of advertising, commodifying and cheapening our justice work in the process. So such informal co-branding entangles our initiatives with Disney's morally messy past. Now that I'll get on board with. It may also serve to rebrand and whitewash Disney by linking one of its signature products to social justice. After all, Disney has a long and troubling history of circulating racist, heterosexist, and Orientalist natives and imagery, which the corporation and its subsidiaries like Pixar are publicly reckoning with. Next, they claim aligning justice work with Star Wars risks threatening inclusion and sense of belonging. Star Wars is popular but divisive, identifying our initiatives with it may nudge them closer to the realm of fandom manufacturing in-groups and out-groups. Those unfamiliar or uncomfortable with Star Wars, including those hurt by the messages it sends, who's that, may feel alienated by the parade of jokes, puns, and references surrounding the term Jedi. Scientific American is the one that published this garbage. There is absolutely nothing about what is contained in this article that could be called scientific. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you did, make sure you subscribe and you leave a like on it, and we'll talk to you again real soon.